So you're saying that the endorsement...
Should we do the introduction? This is Digesting Politics, the August 25th edition. Is it right? Are we on August 25th?
Today's the 26th.
26th. I'm a day behind.
And it'll have a little shelf life.
Right.
With
I'm Bob Henley.
Ozzie Pabra.
And Brian Lehrer. And Bob, you were just telling me before we started rolling that the candidates for New York State Attorney General on the Democratic side, and there are five running in the primary, are waiting for Andrew Cuomo, who said he will make an endorsement in that race, but maybe they're not waiting all that eagerly?
Well, I don't know. I guess what we do know is that back during the convention at Rybrook, where the Democrats got together and made it official with Cuomo and basically punted on the question of the Attorney General. We have to go back to that framework. Remember, back then, what was being reported was that Kathleen Rice, Nassau County District Attorney, was the behind-the-scenes favorite for Andrew Cuomo to pick for Attorney General.
Meanwhile, Eric Schneiderman, the state senator from Manhattan, got the endorsement of the New York Times on Sunday.
Right.
That's big in a race like this, right?
Well, I think also what's happening here is that there is a certain momentum for Schneiderman. There's no doubt that the success of having a Reverend Sharpton come in his corner, the Amsterdam News, the teachers. I mean, he's got it going on. Almost every day, there's a significant development where he's keeping himself in the headlines.
And full disclosure, Eric Schneiderman's father,
Erwin
Schneiderman, is on the WNYC Board of Trustees. The other candidates are Eric DiNalo, the former insurance commissioner of New York State.
And Sean Coffey. Former federal prosecutor turned trial attorney, and then also Assemblyman Richard Brodsky.
So, Ozzie, why did Sharpton line up behind Eric Schneiderman? Remember, one of you sat here a few Digesting Politics ago and noted that at the Rangel birthday bash, Schneiderman was the only attorney general candidate to show up.
Yes.
Right.
Why did Sharpton endorse? I mean, if you want to be cynical, you would say he's going with a winner. When you have a number of unions, like 32BJ, 1199, UFT, then you get the New York Times. When you start seeing those kind of institutional players that have an outsized role in Democratic primary politics lining up behind one candidate, you sort of see the writing on the wall and say it's probably better to get behind this candidate than to outright oppose them.
There's also the issue that Schneiderman's portfolio of issues most closely track the ones that would concern Reverend Sharpton. During the debates that we've had, Schneiderman, when the issue of stop and frisk, the NYPD practice of stopping and frisking individuals, 90% of whom are people of color, men of color, that the police let go and don't take any action on, Schneiderman always pushed a little bit further and said that whole practice needs to be reevaluated, and really staked out for himself a much more adamant position in terms of advocacy for the community and being concerned about potential racial profiling. The Rockefeller drug laws, you know, he was certainly the champion of pushing that back. That is something that has, to a large degree, victimized communities of color that are part of the core of Sharpton's constituency.
And this gets to the idea of what the Attorney General of the state of New York actually does and actually is for. So are there different things they can emphasize? We think of Elliot Spitzer as Attorney General going after Wall Street. We think of Andrew Cuomo going after, what, insurance companies?
Student loans.
I mean, I think what's happening, though, is all of the candidates seem to be – there's two themes. One is the swamp that is Albany. And, of course, Ozzie pointed out earlier today that I guess the Democrats now have an ad –
the State Democratic Party.
Is trying to run against –
Albany,
even though they're in control of all of the different branches of Albany. One of the things, the other major theme is trying to provide some kind of economic stability for people or guarantee that the declining economy and the flat economy won't continue to undermine the average middle class household. And that means standing up for them when it comes to predatory lending. It means things like mortgages. We see a whole new discussion because it looks like there's some concern we could go down for a double dip in terms of the economy, which means that people already who are pressed are feeling even more pressure. And so we see even with Brodsky, the theme of they want to be attorney generals in the daily life of of households.
That's the one we didn't mention yet, I think, is Assemblyman from Westchester, Richard Brodsky, running in this race. Yeah. So are they staking out, Ozzie, different aspects of the attorney general's job that they're trying to identify with? If it's stop and frisk for Schneiderman, if it's predatory lending for Brodsky, I mean, is that the way to look at this race?
Well, I would say that the way to look at this race is how they're all latching on to voter dissatisfaction with the quote-unquote establishment, with the status quo of Albany. Each one of them is saying, is picking an issue and saying, you as a taxpayer, you as a homeowner are being unfairly burdened by what other people are doing wrongly, and I'm going to step in, I'm going to fix that problem, and that solution is going to ease the burden on your local on your local taxes, your local property taxes, income taxes. So when Richard Brodsky says he's going to go after public authorities, it's not just because it's a wrong issue. It's because you as a homeowner are burdened. When Eric DiNalo says, I helped fight Wall Street.
Public authorities like the MTA.
The MTA and a number of other ones like the Adirondack Corporation or
Bridge
whatever
and
you
Tunnel
want.
Authority.
Yeah, there's numerous ones, almost too many to count. You know, maybe we should get a comptroller or two to get in there and count
them
all.
That's a whole other story about how much of New York State government has been put sort of off the books,
right,
away from the accountability to the voters. But anyway, you were going to say about DiNalo.
DiNalo sort of says the same thing, that he helps, you know, he helped clean up Wall Street as a part of Elliot Spitzer's team, and there's a direct relationship between what happened on Wall Street and New York taxpayers. Kathleen Rice, in her first ad, she's literally walking through a crime scene and says, you know, if anyone thinks they're going to get away with stuff on my watch, you know, they're going to get busted. And she says straight to the camera, like, if there's any corruption in Albany, I'm going to bust them. I mean, there's a lot of this conversation about tying in what a attorney general does directly to a taxpayer. Now, when Elliot Spitzer was in office, one of the things that people around Andrew Cuomo will kind of point out in candid moments is that Elliot Spitzer would make a headline about tax derivative swaps, and then the next thing is a person would ask, well, what the hell is that? He did a lot of things that were groundbreaking on Wall Street, but which didn't necessarily connect to an average person on the street, connect with quote-unquote Main Street. Andrew Cuomo's revolution of the office is to somehow take what the AG does and make it very tangible in
and student
a person's
loans
life.
Was a tremendous, as a guy with three kids in college, this resonated with me. It got my attention that, you know, here was this relationship behind the scenes between the lenders and the higher education institutions, and that was kind of busted open, if you will.
And you were on an event as a reporter with Kathleen Rice yesterday.
Right, at St. Vincent's Hospital. There's another example where this was in the villages. Yetta Curlin has a lawyer, a local community advocate, ran unsuccessfully, although very dynamically, against Christine Queen for city council. She has she's a lawyer. There's a committee that's trying to reestablish a hospital in the West Village in response to the closure of St. Vincent's. Kathleen Rice was getting educated, if you will, by local community people on a granular level about the impacts that are happening right now.
She's from Nassau County, right?
Right. So there's a learning curve for her. And in that case, this is a situation where a nonprofit entity got itself swamped in all kinds of debt. There's major questions about accountability here. The Attorney General plays a big role executive pay and in monitoring nonprofit performance and charity performance. So that's another example of where the Attorney General plays an important role. The other thing is that they're all talking about the physical limit. A lot of people aren't aware of the fact the Attorney General is actually rather limited in terms of fighting corruption.
Right.
Statutorily, they have to have permission, if you will, from another state agency to step in, or a local one of the 62 DAs from the counties to ask them to come in to start a political corruption case. As a result, we see over and over again the big corruption cases are invariably federal. So you don't have local DAs who are elected themselves often going for the political corruption cases. So there's much talk across the field about really making that a much more muscular position and giving the AG more power to do it independently.
By the way, did we mention that we'll be holding a debate on Wednesday, September 8th among these?
And who will be hosting that debate?
Well, it just happens that I will be hosting that as part of my show at 11 o'clock, but it also just so happens, I think, that you'll be there. And you'll be there.
Brian is pointing his fingers at
yes,
at
maybe
right.
To
it is radio.
To ask a question. Although, if anybody couldn't figure out with only three of us here who I was pointing out, then
Andrea's not here.
I know she's off this week.
I'm just glad you're pointing with more than one finger.
Right.
You know.
So there we go. Is it anybody else's impression that without Rick Lazio, the whole world wouldn't be having this debate about a cultural center and mosque on Park Place.
Not
in
Manhattan. Newt Gingrich is in the mix.
Didn't he pick up on? I mean, I was on vacation, I think, when some of this started. But was it not Lazio who said, "Aha, there's an issue here. I'm going to put this in the headlines," because the process was going forward. It was moving toward the landmark preservation vote to allow it, and Lazio stepped out front and said, "No, no mosque, no way," or not.
I think there's a fair argument to be made that's giving too much credit to Lazio. There are a number of competing factors that would have put this issue forward. One of them being Carl Palladino. One of them being Sarah Palin, you could argue.
Newt Gingrich was in the mix.
Newt Gingrich was in the mix. I think what Palladino did, what Lazio did was partly in response to the Republican primary dynamics that he's in against Palladino, which is saying, here's an issue. This other guy with a lot of money is talking about it, going to be talking about it.
Was already talking about it.
I believe
Palladino.
So. Yeah. And I don't – I mean, politically, you could argue it was a brilliant move to sort of latch on this issue, get in the forefront of it, and sort of make it your own, and then somehow tie it back to
especially if you only have $600,000 in the bank and you're facing a juggernaut, and that's Lazio's treasury, $23 million on behalf of Attorney General Cuomo, and he has gotten a tremendous amount of free media out of it.
Yes, yes. Now, I think where Lazio is given credit for is somehow tying in Andrew Cuomo – into the issue, which he and the Democratic Party have been loath to do. If you see the news and the statements coming out of the Democratic Party and Andrew Cuomo specifically, it's economic issues. It is, as in today, the swamp of corruption that is Albany. I mean, they are talking pocketbook issues. They're hitting Lazio all the time about bailouts and stuff. So
this is the classic Republican strategy, and it goes back to Richard Nixon and earlier, of trying to change the subject to a social wedge issue, right? Whether it's affirmative action or gay marriage.
Well, it's actually because he's...
And what Lazio did to put the attention on Andrew Cuomo, tell me if I'm wrong, is to ask him to investigate the funding.
Under the capacity
of
the charity.
Which has not come in yet.
Which, never mind that there is no funding yet. They're going to start a capital campaign at some point.
Right.
But nevertheless, he did it. He put it in Cuomo's court. Cuomo, I guess, took the bait because he said this is a question of religious freedom. What do you mean investigate the funding?
But in a very circumspect way, I asked Cuomo that question because I was following him in the campaign trail when it broke. Mm-hmm. And I was in Long Island. And Cuomo didn't make any big deal about it. He just was very circumspect in his answer to the idea of it being a basic constitutional question of the freedom of religion and a question of an establishment question that you can't have the government dictating where a religious institution builds a place of worship. I think that the Lazio's problem was that he also is being challenged in the conservative primary and in the Republican primary. So he really needed to get people to think that he's the guy going against Cuomo. So by engaging Cuomo, he kind of is like kind of trying to actualize like it's already October. And he's raised his own stature by taking it to Cuomo. So it's not like he's fighting with Palladino. He's looking on to the next thing. And the idea is that people will begin to believe that's the case.
Lazio has been written off by most political pundits. And in fact, but because of this issue, he was on Meet the Press. Mm-hmm. He was on Sean Hannity. Mm-hmm. He is receiving national attention for this issue that he would not normally, I believe, be getting if he was simply billed as the guy running against Andrew Cuomo in November, which is not yet determined he will be.
Is there polling in this race? Does Palladino have a chance?
What do you think?
Polling has Lazio winning with Palladino gaining on him. I believe the last poll, it had it within 10 points or so. The number that is really interesting is the amount that Palladino has been able to close the gap. It was something like 20 or 30 points earlier. I believe it's down to 10. Now, part of that is just the natural trend of people focusing in and saying, hey, it's that time of year. I think there's an election, and they start tuning in. The other number that's really, really important, at least for the punditry, is how much money Palladino has said he will put in the race, which is $10 million. Lazio has been raising. nearly as much money as he's spending, meaning he and he had to give himself a $200,000 loan. So if you look at the practicality of it, Lazio is severely hamstrung financially heading towards November against 24, 26 millions of dollars that Andrew Cuomo has, and Republicans see another guy with at least a few million in the bank, and he has picked up a few county chair, Paladino has picked up a few county chairman endorsements. Some of that is regional based.
And also there's places where there's contests going on, like up in the Hudson Valley, the race over who's going to run against John Hall, where there is a battle going on for the Republican nomination. You could see these local contests having a kind of up ballot phenomena where people come out who are Tea Party oriented. I would imagine
Paladino being Tea Party-ish.
Right. And the other thing, too, is that I think that the situation in Alaska that looked like that upset with the Palin-endorsed candidate took out
I was
the,
just going
to
ask.
Right. I mean, to me, there's a kind. This is where the energy is right now within the Republican Party.
But now you also get with these Tea Party candidates, when they become nominees, the possibility that they're going to be so extreme in some of their views. You know, the guy in Alaska said that unemployment insurance might be unconstitutional. That's one example. You have Paladino just seeming to try to outdo himself every week using eminent domain to stop the mosque as a proposal of his, using empty or underutilized prisons to house welfare recipients and people on unemployment. I think he included both of those in there.
Well,
correct me if I'm wrong.
He's calmed down from the convention where he said he was going to actually use a baseball bat to clean up Albany.
Yeah, but that's a metaphor. It's not a metaphor when he says house welfare recipients and people on unemployment in prisons, give them job training, cheap housing, right, and personal hygiene lessons.
Right. Well, the hygiene lessons, I think that sort of crosses a line of decency that most people find offensive. I'm sure there's some, you know, in the press corps that may need a hygiene lesson after going on the campaign trail with some of these guys.
I've been meaning to talk to you about this, Ozzie.
I knew it. It's the food, I swear. But Paladino is, he seems to be so unrestrained with the normal dynamics that most candidates operate in. Here's a guy who says that he's raising money, but he's going to put a large chunk of it in himself, so he's not beholden to like a big funding operation. He also says, I'm only going to run once, therefore I don't care about the political fallout. And you have the almost complete opposite dynamic in Rick Lazio, a guy who very much cares about his standing in the political world. He was a former congressman, dabbled at least once on a radio show about hosting it with Andrew Cuomo.
He colors within the lines,
which is a great way to put it. And he has, you know, fundraising issues. He's calling all the time. And you have this like network of people around Paladino that normally would see an issue like suggesting people need hygiene lessons. And there is not that filter that says, you know what, that may not sell so easily as you think it will. He doesn't seem to have that person next to him saying, you need to soften that just a little bit.
Well, we'll see. But do you think that what we saw in Florida on Tuesday, where in a state that has a lot more registered Democrats than registered Republicans, there were many more registered Republicans.
New York's export.
Who showed up, former New Yorkers in Boca, who showed up to vote in the Republican primary, even though both parties had competitive races. Are we going to see a little bit, is there a chance that we're going to see a little bit of a turnout shock on primary day in New York with Republicans turning out to choose between Lazio and Paladino, to choose between the candidates who want to get nominated to run against Schumer or Gillibrand?
Well, I mean, certainly what I've seen on the Democratic side is they're talking about something in the 20%, 25% turnout. And, you know, that's a good question. I haven't seen polling about the degree to which people on the Republican side are engaged statewide.
It's unclear, and it's sort of unprecedented. You have the head of the Republican Party ticket who was not supported by the head of the Republican Party. Rick Lazio was opposed by Ed Cox, the chairman, who preferred another candidate. So you sort of have the establishment having a candidate thrusted upon them that they were not hoping for. Then you have these somewhat, you know, below the radar candidates running for Senate against Schumer. I mean, Bernstein and Jay Townsend are sort of credible enough, but they haven't caught on with the public's attention as people who could legitimately be considered a rival to Schumer. And then you have Gillibrand, an appointed senator, who should, on paper, be vulnerable to a very credible challenge, drawing what many people say as the best possible hand. You have three guys who sort of seem to not be as tested politically as they should be for the kind of inviting target that Gillibrand is. So it's unclear what type of turnout you are going to get with these potentially large races.
I'll just leave this out there without comment, unless you want to say something really fast because we're out of time. Tom Vilsack, the agriculture secretary, was interviewed by Politico yesterday, and he said without illegal immigrants, our food costs would be 3, 4, or 5 times higher than they are.
If that increases the price of chicken and rice, which I'm enjoying at the moment, it could have serious consequences.
Digest this.